Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Stay tuned for Mark Levine. Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. In every democracy, there will always be a battle between liberty and security. We've had presidents, and just like there's been kings and rulers for generations, indeed for centuries, that have argued that they need the power to detain people. And kings have argued that if you ask why you're detaining these people, that takes away from the president's power, takes away from the king's power. The kings of England, in fact, did this for centuries until the Magna Carta came along and thus became the beginning of what is now known as the writ of habeas corpus. This sounds like fancy legal mumbo-jumbo, but it's actually quite important. The writ of habeas corpus means to have the body. And basically it means that when they take your body, when the jailer carts you away, you have a right to know why. You don't necessarily have a right to be free, but you have a right to insist that the jailer follow the law. As I said, this has been part of English jurisprudence for hundreds of years. And in the American Constitution, it was put in by our founders, who made clear that the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Throughout all of American history, indeed, the only time the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus was suspended was at a time of rebellion during the Civil War by Abraham Lincoln, who knew this provision and cited the provision. Until, that is, the next president came along, George W. Bush. George W. Bush is the first president in American history to say that the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended, but you don't need rebellion, you don't need invasion, you don't need this document, the Constitution, at all. And he did that with prisoners held in Guantanamo Bay. Just last week, the United States Supreme Court, in an astonishing decision, one that I'll put up here for you, it is called the Boumediene decision, Boumediene v. Bush, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, in that decision held that actually the president does not trump the Constitution trumps the president, he cannot suspend the writ of habeas corpus in the way that Bush said he could. But what will happen now? What will happen to those prisoners? What will be the legislative response? Will this decision be upheld? What does it mean that the dissenters argue, including Antonin Scalia, that the nation will regret this decision? He said Americans will die because of this decision. These are tough issues, but someone who I know is up on it and working very hard on the Hill to make sure our civil liberties are protected is Michael McLeod Ball. He's sitting next to me, and he is the Chief Legislative Policy Counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union. Michael, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me.
How important is the decision of Boumediene v. Bush?
Oh, it's incredibly important, not only for the individuals who now have the habeas rights who are situated in Guantanamo Bay, but also for the country. I think this takes an immeasurable step toward restoring some of the respect that we've lost abroad in the past several years. And I think that that's one of the impacts of this decision that will live on. I think, contrary to one of the dissenting justices who is worried about the negative impacts of this decision, I think this is the first step on the road toward restoring some of our respect abroad.
But, I mean, these people in Guantanamo Bay, some of them were taken in Afghanistan. They seem to be nasty people. The administration tells us they're terrorists, and Justice Scalia says that they're in a war, and in a war to kill every one of us, and because of this decision, people will be killed. I mean, this is major stuff.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Some of them are the worst of the worst. I will take the administration at face value on that. But you know what? Some of them are not. And the folks who don't deserve to be there ought not be held without some possibility of figuring out if, in fact, they are legitimately being held. And I think this decision is that step along the process for trying to provide some justice for those who may be improperly held there.
But if we give them fair trials, the full civilian due process, the kind of thing that the Constitution says should be done with American citizens, then don't we risk that some of this classified military evidence that's being used to hold them will come to light and will risk harming our intelligence forces?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of ifs there in that phraseology you just used. What we're first talking about is whether they are properly being held. We haven't even gotten yet to the decision of whether there should be a trial. And, of course, you know there's only a handful whose trials have actually been scheduled at this point. Those are the so-called the worst of the worst. And so set those folks aside. What we're talking about are the several hundred people who are there and coming to a decision of whether they are properly being held there or not. And simply having access to the courts to make that threshold level determination. And it seems to me, given all of the literally hundreds who have been released back to their own countries or to other places, it seems to me that the folks that are left there deserve that very minimum level of due process.
There are 270 people currently being held in Guantanamo Bay, and on its face, the decision seems to just apply to them, just to apply to the people in Guantanamo Bay. And yet, you look at the ringing rhetoric, both from the majority opinion written by Justice Kennedy and by the dissent written, actually there were two dissents, but the most angry one was written by Justice Scalia. And Justice Kennedy says that even in extraordinary times, the president must follow the law. He uses very ringing rhetoric for a decision that affects a relatively small number of people. And again, Scalia, equally ringing rhetoric, that nation will regret this decision. People will die. Very, very strong language for something that affects very few people. Why is that?
Well, I think it's the concept, right? It's the concept that they're arguing over. And sure, there are real people who are affected by this decision, but it's the concept of whether these folks who are in this place that has been referred to as a legal black hole, whether they have the same rights as other folks who are either in the country or who are U.S. citizens. Now, the decision doesn't say that they're entitled to those same rights, but it did say that they are under such control by the United States, regardless of how you construe the real estate that is the Guantanamo Bay base. So regardless of how you view that real property, they are under the effective control of the U.S. as a sovereign nation, and therefore should be entitled to that basic set of due process rights to determine whether they are properly being held under the control of the country.
But wasn't that the whole point of Guantanamo Bay? The idea is we can hold them, mm-hmm. and we hold them outside of U.S. territory, and by doing so, we don't have to follow U.S. law. This could have been the president's own private prison camp.
Right.
I mean, he could literally take anyone on earth, put them there, and never, ever have to account for them. This would give the president, I mean, a really great authority to use and be beyond U.S. law.
Yeah, and doesn't it make sense that the Supreme Court said, you know what, that ain't right. There's a reason that there's no other place that the president could have made that argument. There's a reason that he couldn't put him at Fort Leavenworth and make that argument. There's a reason that he couldn't hold him at some foreign military base.
The reason
and
is
make that
the Constitution and the writ of habeas corpus.
Exactly.
Okay,
so.
But what about other prisons? We already know now that there are secret, now I guess it's no longer secret, prisons, not just in Guantanamo Bay. They've been reported in Poland, in several other of our allies, countries of NATO. What about when the United States controls a prison in another country?
Well, there are a whole bunch of different factual circumstances that you can get into, and I think it depends upon what the specific facts are. But I know that there is, if you are being transferred from Guantanamo to another place, I think you have the opportunity now to challenge the legitimacy of that transfer. And so, it's sort of like a house of cards that's come tumbling down now. The other thing that I think is an interesting offshoot of this decision is it now puts the whole argument over whether to close Guantanamo in a completely different posture.
There's no need for it anymore.
So doesn't that make this the perfect solution to that political squabble that's been going on for quite some time now. Now you bring them to some base in the United States. You afford them the appropriate rights that the court says that they're entitled to, which, by the way, are not all that extensive, but they are entitled to certain rights. And you close down Guantanamo, and there we go.
Now, Congress,
move on to the next issue.
Congress gave very explicit language. Now, this should be clear. It was the Republican Congress before the Democrats took over. I'm quite confident Congress would not pass the same law in 08 that they passed in 06. But in 06, Congress passed a law that said, courts, you have no right to determine this. Mm-hmm. This is beyond the courts. They literally stripped the courts of jurisdiction and said, you have no right, courts, to determine whether anyone has a writ of habeas corpus. In effect, they suspended the writ of habeas corpus, exactly what this Constitution says they can't do. And Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, in a more measured dissent, perhaps, than Justice Scalia, though, of course, they all joined each other's dissents, he and Scalia and Alito and Thomas said, hey, why not respect what Congress and the President did?
Well, you're exactly right. And it's perhaps not really fair to characterize this as a slap against the President. In fact, it was a slap against the President and the Congress, which actually took the action that was being struck down here under the Military Commissions Act, the Detainee Treatment Act. And the court is saying, well, you know what? There is a place for the judiciary in this whole discussion, and it is the judiciary since the time of Marbury versus Madison that gets to decide what is constitutional. And so interpreting the habeas provision of the Constitution, the court has always had the authority to say what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. And in this case, they said, Congress, you went too far. President, you went too far. And these are the rights that these individuals are entitled to have.
Now, one thing I want to make clear to all the non-lawyers out there, you and I are both lawyers, is that the writ of habeas corpus by itself doesn't free anybody. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say, it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It doesn't mean that the terrorists, the very dangerous ones, a lot of the people who may not be terrorists at all, are suddenly free. All habeas corpus does is it requires the jailer, in this case the president, to say that he has a legal basis for holding people. All it says is, hey, why are you holding me? And then if you can answer that question, everything's just fine. The court didn't address the question of what happens next.
That's right.
So what does happen next?
Well, it's a good question, but it's a question that that courts have had to deal with for many, many years. It's not just these detainees in Guantanamo who have habeas rights. You know what? It's the worst of the worst murderers and rapists that are currently in our prison system right
Even
now.
Even someone on death row has
They
habeas
have
rights.
These rights. And so
because of this document.
Right, exactly so. And so the fact that these people have habeas rights, what we do know is that their rights are not limited to those that were set forth in the Military Commissions Act or the Detainee Treatment Act or other pieces of legislation that may have purported to affect what rights or absence of rights the folks in Guantanamo had. What we do know is that the right exists, and it will be up to the courts now to sort out how that actually gets put into practice.
Okay, but now, before this happened, this came up before the court, they already ruled 5 or 6 years ago that Guantanamo Bay counts the same as the United States, and now they had to rule the exact same thing over again. It's almost like the administration didn't follow it back in 02, and they're not following it now. But they did draft something that was thrown out. Are they going to have to draft something else now?
Well, I don't think they have to, and I don't see any effort in Congress to try to draft something. I know that Senator Graham has suggested that maybe the Constitution be amended.
Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
Yes, that's right.
He wants to amend the Constitution to take out it so that we can suspend the writ of habeas corpus.
You know, I haven't actually read the proposal, but to amend the Constitution to, in effect, overturn the impact of this.
Maybe we should just get rid of the Magna Carta and just start over again with something else. I'm not sure.
I'm sure somebody's thought of that.
But so you don't think Congress has to legislate anything?
I don't think they have to. The federal district courts have had to deal with a whole bunch of different situations.
I'll tell you what, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I want to know what the prospects are for Congress moving forward, whether you think they have to or not, and also get to some of the calls. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back after this.
Some of Bin Laden calls getting nuclear weapons a religious duty. Today, materials that can be used to make nuclear weapons are stored in more than 40 countries.
Sometimes protected by just a chain link fence.
Yet not enough is being done to lock down these materials
before terrorists steal them. Why did we learn all this?
My mother,
my son,
my sister-in-law
were all murdered September 11th.
Help protect America.
Together we can.
Please join us.
The stem cell issue is being debated throughout the country. Truth is, most everyone has an opinion, even if they don't know the facts.
Let's stop arguing and start really understanding the potential of stem cell research.
For us and for millions of Americans living with disabilities, get the facts.
Call 1-877-842-3442 for free information from the Stem Cell Research Foundation. That's 1-877-842-3442.
Following the tragic events of September 11th, there have been hundreds of violent attacks against innocent Americans.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
Remember, please stop the hate.
We're stronger when we are united.
Remember.
Remember what that flag you're waving stands for.
One nation under God.
Indivisible.
With liberty.
And justice.
For all.
In America, there's either room for everyone or it's not America.
Don't pick the wrong fight.
Let's keep America land of the free.
Stop the hate.
Planning a home renovation? Put this at the top of your to-do list.
Because after 10 years, none of you are protected against tetanus and another potentially fatal disease, diphtheria.
A minor injury, such as a cut or a scrape, can put you at risk for a tetanus infection.
And while safety gear offers some protection, an up-to-date vaccination called the TD booster is the best insurance against tetanus.
So get the TD booster. If it's been 10, do it again.
We're back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm here with Michael McLeod Ball. He is the Chief Legislative Policy Counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union. And we're talking about the writ of habeas corpus. Now, before you go away and say, oh, this is some obscure legal principle, I don't need to know this, this is quite important. If the government picks you up off the street and throws you in jail, you kind of think they need a reason, right? That's what the writ of habeas corpus is. It is your right, guaranteed under the Constitution of the United States, to say if the police pick you up and throw you in jail in the United States or abroad, anywhere, controlled by Americans, if the military does it, hey, why are you doing this? What's your basis in law? It is a right that has existed for some 800 years in Anglo-American jurisprudence, and indeed George W. Bush is the first president in history to throw it out the window in ways that are against this document, the Constitution. Now, there was a president before George W. Bush who suspended the writ of habeas corpus, and he's been talked about by Republicans as someone to follow. It was Abraham Lincoln, perhaps the best president in American history. But Abraham Lincoln knew the Constitution, and he knew the Constitution does allow the writ to be suspended in very, very severe cases, rebellion and invasion. And, of course, Civil War was a rebellion. This isn't the first time I've addressed this provision. 1 year ago, I debated with Republican strategist Mike Lane on this very point prior to the Supreme Court decision. I want to play for you what he and I said 1 year ago.
And then around it for a number of different
reasons. I want you to agree with me it was a lawless decision.
Well, no, they had an opinion that that justified what they were doing.
It
based
had no
on,
basis based, in law.
Based on the resolution passed by Congress, which has you've complained about to me before was an overly broad resolution.
The Supreme Court said by 8-1, by the way, that resolution definitely did not authorize this conduct.
And it didn't.
Okay, but here's the problem, Mike. It seems to me that what you're suggesting is the president can do anything as long as he's got some hack lawyer who will sign on to it, and then 3 years, 4 years later, maybe the courts will stop him. But in the meantime, you can get a lot of dirt.
In times of war, presidents have done extraordinary things. I remind you of a conversation we've had before about Abraham Lincoln suspending habeas corpus during the Civil War.
Legal under this document, as you know.
Is still an extraordinary act.
It's legal. I don't mind when the president does extraordinary things that are legal. We've got to take a break, but let me just read going out. I'm going to read Article 1, Section 9 of my favorite document in the world, the United States Constitution. Quote, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln knew this provision, and I don't think anyone can argue the Civil War was not a rebellion. It was. He cited this provision, and he suspended habeas corpus. What we have from this president is suspension of habeas corpus without rebellion or invasion. That's against the law.
But was it necessary?
Different question. Lawless, 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
Okay, so that was me and Mike Lane 1 year ago. Now, it's very interesting. I was concerned about whether the decision was lawless. Mike Lane was concerned about whether the decision was necessary. He seemed to echo Scalia's reasoning. Law be damned, the Constitution is not a suicide pact, we hear people like that saying. Whether or not it's legal, we got to keep these guys or they're going to kill Americans. That's what Scalia says. And what's interesting is that Scalia claims, he believes in the Constitution, claims he's a strict constructionist. But when it comes to holding prisoners in Guantanamo Bay, it's all about protecting Americans, the law be damned.
Yeah, it's and we've seen that same argument play out over and over again in a number of the issues that that have been in Congress over the past several years. And as you might expect, 9/11 was a traumatic event for the country. And you're correct that in times of war, these sorts of decisions have come up, and these kinds of decisions have been made. Doesn't make them right. And we're fortunate in this case that. That the court, by its 5-4 decision, has come down pretty squarely on the side of what you and I would agree is the appropriate interpretation of that provision.
Let me ask you about another example in American history between Abraham Lincoln and today, probably the greatest war between the Civil War and today. I don't even know if today counts. But in World War II, we interned tens of thousands, maybe even more than 100,000, I don't know, Japanese Americans in camps in California. And this became before the Supreme Court in the Korematsu decision. Now, I don't know if you're familiar enough with the details of it, but why wouldn't those prisoners have had a writ of habeas corpus? I guess they weren't considered prisoners?
Well, I don't know enough about the details of the actual litigation at that time, but I do know that they had the ability to challenge their detention at that time.
Well, actually, they did, I guess, and yes, that's what became the Korematsu decision.
Exactly, and that's the point here, is that individuals who are held by the government, by fiat or by whatever reason, ought to have the ability to go to an independent decision maker and have that detention examined. Is it appropriate? Is it fair? Is it just? Because that's how we live our society.
Let me go to some of the callers here. We've got George from Fairfax. George, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. I just want to reflect tangentially a little bit on what you're talking about with the standards for impeachment as determined by the Republican Party a few years ago. They have failed to apply a similar standard for Bush now and failing to impeach him. What are the prospects for any kind of criminal prosecution for Bush when he's left office? Is this the standard that does not require impeachment? It's a pretty desperate situation, it seems.
Thank you for your question, George. I'm going to cut you off only because you're breaking up, but I did get your general point, which is they're breaking the law. The Supreme Court says they're breaking the law, at least the most important law, the Constitution of the United States. Why isn't this a war crime? Why isn't this, along with torture and some of the other things the president's doing, why aren't these grounds for impeachment?
Well, fairly detailed analysis, I think, that you need to go through in order to determine if there is some sort of criminal action that's taking place. First of all, the Constitution is not breaching the Constitution does not necessarily mean that you've committed a crime.
Okay.
And so that's the first thing. On the issue of torture, for example, I think the analysis becomes a little closer.
Well, let's talk about torture, because I know that in Scott McClellan's book, I think is where I read this, that the FBI actually set up a war crimes folder until they found out about it and ordered them to close the folder. But regarding these torture, because we had the highest levels of the government, apparently, I mean, maybe they're not clear whether it was the president or not, but Cheney and Rove and Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice are all in the room dictating exactly, choreographing, indeed, how we torture people. Is that a war crime?
Well, I think it possibly could be, but what we've been calling for is for the appointment of a special prosecutor to determine exactly what happened, who authorized it, and what ought to be done about it. We can stand here or sit here and speculate about these things that ought not have been done, but we really don't know for sure, you and I, in our limited knowledge, who said what to whom, who authorized what, and how that information sort of flowed down the chain of command to the folks who actually committed some of these terrible abuses.
And what's interesting is the president refuses to say. Whenever the Judiciary Committee or other committees of Congress subpoena his staff and require him to appear before Congress, he says, no, I'm just not coming. I'm not going to obey your subpoena.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there a legal ground for that?
Well, we think not. And it's ultimately up to Congress then to attempt to enforce its subpoenas, which it has not successfully been able to do to this point. It's interesting because you, in almost all of those cases, you need to also bring in the Justice Department to help you enforce those subpoenas.
Right, right. I've argued with John Conyers that actually they should use the old sergeant at arms and lock Harriet Myers up in a Capitol office building. He says he doesn't have the vote for it, but he does support the idea. So maybe people can call their members of Congress to ask for that. Let me go to Lamont from Alexandria. Lamont, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Mr. Levine, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. I'd like to clarify a point, then ask you a question. You said the Constitution, in rebellion or invasion, the president has the right to suspend habeas corpus. Am I correct?
That's correct. I can read it again if you like, but it's right here.
No, I just want to make sure. Now, I'm curious. Wouldn't the attack on the Twin Towers and the Pentagon be considered an invasion?
I've been asked that before. Let me throw that over to Michael McLeod Ball. They came in to our country. They took our planes. They flew them into buildings, and 3,000 Americans died. Isn't that an invasion?
I certainly believe it could be interpreted that way. I don't know that that was the question that was squarely before the court in this particular case.
Well, the court cited this very provision in the case and said that, in effect, it was not a rebellion or invasion.
I think one of the things that was very important to the court was the length of time that had passed since the events of 9/11, with these folks being held without any recourse, without any possibility of a fair examination of the legitimacy of their detention. I think that, I know you've read the decision as well, but in my view, the length of time that had passed and the absence of access to some sort of an independent, fair judicial process were the factors that seemed to be the key part of their thinking.
Lamont, let me give you my view on this, and if we have to run into a break, you can come back and call in and let me know if you disagree with me. Here's how I see it. The terrorists of September 11th, the 19 of them, arguably invaded our country, but it's not an invasion. They're dead now. They were suiciders. There's no occupying army. When I think of an invasion of the United States, I think of the Revolutionary War. I think actually also the War of 1812, when the British came into this city, into Washington, D.C., burned down the White House and had stationed troops on American soil. No doubt that was an invasion. No doubt, in my view, James Madison could have suspended the writ of habeas corpus at that time. The Civil War was no doubt a rebellion. But I think it pushes it to say that 19 people now dead somehow constitute invasion. It was an awful, heinous act, and I want to be clear about that. But to me, the founders knew what they were doing. There's a difference between mass murderers doing awful things on American soil and an invasion, an occupying army. And to me, that's what this provision is supposed to prevent. If you disagree, call in. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275.
This is firstgov.gov, where we're obsessed with getting you government information.
Brand new student loan applications on the site, baby. This calls for a celebration.
Here's your uncle.
So in the end, it was either take the astronaut gig or come work here. What can I say? Duty called.
Dude, that's my cop.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure that's Sam's cop.
Oh, sorry?
Yeah. No. Sam's. No.
Just log on or email us and get what you need.
C, change of address form. That's how it's done.
D, driver's license renewal.
E, emailing social security information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Well, all right.
What are those?
Government surplus cars for auction.
You posted those online last time.
No, you did.
I'm posting them online this time.
For all your government information, firstgov.gov.
Oh, what are we
we got here. Sometimes you feel tired. You can't seem to lose those extra pounds off your midsection. And your joints hurt when you take the stairs. Well, you're getting older. But I'm happy to say that there's some simple things we can do to keep you happy and healthy for years to come. We can also lower your risk for some serious diseases the older population is often subject to. Proper nutrition is more important than ever. Your body has changed, you know. Not as many treats. A basic exercise plan, lots of walks and fresh air, and most importantly, come and see me for twice yearly checkups to help ensure the best possible quality of life. Now, how does that sound? Good boy.
Improve the quality of life for your elderly pet. Schedule twice yearly checkups
like
that include preventive care and regular lab work.
People are watching and they care.
A message from the veterinary members of the American Animal Hospital Association.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. In the decision of Boumediene v. Bush, we had a very important ruling by the Supreme Court that indeed the writ of habeas corpus cannot be suspended unless in cases of invasion or rebellion. In other words, they upheld this document, the Constitution of the United States. But it didn't answer all the questions, because habeas corpus merely gives someone a right to say, hey, am I being lawfully held? It doesn't go into the procedures for how you deal with someone who is in jail. Now, if they're in jail in the United States and they've committed a crime, murder, or something like that, there are very clear state law procedures, even federal law procedures, that they have to follow. But in this case, it's still unclear. Prior to the Supreme Court decision, there were things called combatant status review tribunals put in place by the same law where Congress tried to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. And there you had military judges, and they were controlled by the president. And in fact, there were cases where the military judge allowed the defendant to present a defense and was removed by the president of the United States. There were cases where the military prosecutor tried to be fair to the other side and was removed by the president of the United States. They were, in other words, his star chamber, where the president could basically do it however they want. But is the ACLU arguing that it should go all the way in the other direction? Should the prisoners in Guantanamo Bay have all the same rights of someone wanted for murder for, Timothy McVeigh, for example, for bombing the Oklahoma building?
Well, not necessarily. We have not taken a specific position about the specific procedures that ought to be available to these folks. You know, there was legislation that was working its way through Congress about modifying the Military Commissions Act, which set up the procedure that was in place up until this decision. And that essentially came to a halt when the Supreme Court decided to take up this case. And so all of those discussions have stopped.
Some specifics, though.
Yeah.
All right, okay. One of the things that the people of Guantanamo Bay did not get is a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The Sixth Amendment says that, let me get it right here, that the accused, doesn't say Americans, interesting, just says the accused shall enjoy all these rights and including the assistance of counsel mm-hmm. for his defense. All right, these people are accused. They're not American citizens. They're not held in the United States. Do they have the right to the assistance of counsel?
Yes.
They do.
Yes.
Because of the Sixth Amendment?
Well, yes. Let's think about the context of this decision. In order for the habeas corpus right to apply, that suggests that the Constitution as a whole applies to these folks that are being held in Guantanamo. And so if the habeas right applies, doesn't also the Bill of Rights apply?
Well, I don't know. Do they have a right to have an impartial jury? Do they have a right to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation? That one doesn't seem to be too bad. To be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process to obtaining witnesses, actually subpoenaing people, forcing them to come to court and tell the truth?
Well, here are the things that they ought to be able to present evidence of their own. They ought not be compelled to testify against themselves.
That would be the Fifth Amendment.
They ought not have evidence introduced against them that is the result of coercion, torture. Exactly. And so I think there are some of these things that certainly apply. Others become somewhat more debatable. The jury trial, for example, I don't know that you would consider these criminal proceedings.
Could be like immigration, for example.
Yeah,
you don't have a right
correct.
To a jury.
Right, exactly. So.
So, but here's my question. We've tortured some of these people. Now, if you're telling me we can't use information obtained after torture, after coercion,
we may lose some of this information. Maybe they only confessed to doing these crimes after torture. We may have to let these people go.
And all of the best information suggests that the information you get from torture is probably wrong anyway. So, I mean, that's the whole point. We have, aside from the Constitution, we have evidentiary rules. Those evidentiary rules exist based upon an evaluation of the reliability of that information. The reason that we do not allow coerced testimony is because it's inherently unreliable. And therefore, the fact finder, the court, the jury, if it relies on that kind of information, it ought to be able to rely on that information.
Now, Justice Scalia says in his dissent, he gives an example of one person released from Guantanamo Bay that went out and killed again. Isn't that evidence that we need to keep him locked up forever?
I'm not quite sure of the reliability of all of that information. But let's assume it's true.
Right.
Let's assume it's true. Our nation is a nation founded on laws, and we need to follow that process. Sometimes we pay a price for that. And if we don't follow those laws, we pay a different price. And in my view, the different price that we pay is far worse than, as bad as it is, somebody being released who then does a bad thing afterwards.
One of the arguments I guess I'd make to Justice Scalia is we never tried that guy. Maybe we shouldn't have released him without a trial. Give these people a trial. We'll find out they've done bad things, and maybe we can keep them in prison. We have more callers. Lamont from Alexandria has called back, which he has a right to do. Lamont, please, give us your comment or question.
Well, Mark, you're invited. I do disagree with you. One quick comment, though. Just
go ahead. You have a right to disagree. Tell me why you disagree.
Just real quick, out of respect for Tim Russell, with this conversation, you should audition for Meet the Press. Pretty good.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Call NBC and tell them that. I appreciate it. Go ahead. Make your comment.
Here we go. Japan was an invasion, correct, according to your definition?
When they win the Pearl Harbor, in my view... yes, although, just to be clear, Hawaii was a territory at the time and not the United States, so it's a little bit closer to the line, but it was a U.S. territory, so I would consider Pearl Harbor an invasion, although they didn't occupy it, so I would argue the invasion didn't last very long.
Man, I understand, but you were saying that Japan, they destroyed warships. When we invaded Afghanistan, based on the attacks.
Yes, we did. And I supported that war, by the way, just so
you know. That is a war, then. You would say that's a war, correct?
I did. I supported the war in Afghanistan.
Now, then, if the invasion that I call an invasion came from not a government, but a group of people that were sponsored by a government, wouldn't that almost be the same as us being invaded by a country? We went to another country based on the attacks that we had from that country.
Lamont, let me make a distinction for you, okay? There are many, many things that I consider awful, horrible things that are even acts of war, all right? Pearl Harbor was an act of war. As far as I'm concerned, what happened on September 11th was an act of war, and we can respond in very strong ways. I mean, obviously, we declared war in World War II and ended up actually dropping a nuclear bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, obviously, we responded in a very dramatic way. The specific example that I'm talking about, though, is the writ of habeas corpus. That's a very different question from the laws of war. I support the laws of war. I support self-defense. I'm glad we acted in World War II. And I supported going into Afghanistan because of the attacks of September 11th. But what I'm saying is that the Constitution is my highest priority. And this says that the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless the United States is invaded. Now, there's still other things you can do. Remember, the writ of habeas corpus doesn't free prisoners. All it does is it says the prisoner has a right to ask, do you have a right to hold me here? Now, under the United Nations, under laws of war, under self-defense, we can hold prisoners of war. That is part of war. That is so if someone filed a writ of habeas corpus, all you'd have to do is say, hey, the Geneva Conventions give us a right to hold you. We have to treat you humanely. We can't torture you. But you want to know why you're being held? Here's why you're being held, and so forth. So I just want to make that distinction. I believe the writ of habeas corpus cannot be suspended in case of except for invasion or rebellion, because at that point, invasion or rebellion, it's hard to even have courts. I mean, with the United States being occupied, whether by the British or by rebel Southerners, it's very hard to have courts. You can't even have a court because they're occupying your land. I think that's why the framers distinguished
rebellion and invasion from every other example. You couldn't even have courts work. But that's not at all to say that we don't have laws of war and other things. And the examples you gave, if someone were to file a writ of habeas corpus, maybe a Japanese prisoner of war, saying, why are you holding me? You'd say, we're holding you because Congress declared war on you, and we have a right to do that. That's my view. I want to see if Michael McCarvel has his own two cents.
Yeah, well, first of all, the Japanese did occupy the Aleutian Islands.
That's true. Two small islands, yeah. You're absolutely right about that. Although those were territories as well.
That's true, but they did occupy them.
That's true. So,
and I would make the same distinction about the use of the term invasion or rebellion. And also remember that there's the concept of the safety of the citizenry that's also a part of the habeas provision in the Constitution. So not only is it invasion or rebellion, but invasion or rebellion where the safety of the citizenry is at stake.
That's an important point. The quote says, unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. So it actually, it's not all cases of rebellion or invasion.
Right.
You have to suspend it in cases of rebellion or invasion when necessary for public safety. So it's actually even narrower than that.
And so applying that to the circumstances at hand, you know, I would read the Boumediene decision as, you know, if they made that decision in the month or two after 9/11, they might have come down a different way. But the fact that they're making that decision now 7 years later, I think, again, reading the decision and looking at how much emphasis they placed upon the time that had lapsed, you know, I think that's a key factor in the decision.
Lamont, I want to give you the last word. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have one quick question.
Yeah.
The prisoners in Guantanamo, were they all from the Taliban, or were they also part of other terrorist groups? Because it would seem to me, according to my argument, only the Taliban could be held without habeas and not people from Al-Qaeda or anything like that. I'm just curious, and I'll hang up. Mark, phenomenal show. Thank you.
Keep watching and keep calling in to disagree. I appreciate the dialogue. My understanding, and I'll give Michael a chance to add in his two cents, is that there's all kinds of prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. Some were in Afghanistan, some were Taliban, some were Al-Qaeda, some had no connection whatsoever to Taliban or Al-Qaeda. I believe one was picked up in Bosnia. They're from all over the planet, and the only thing they have in common is that the executive branch of government, led by the president, has said they are enemy combatants and are dangerous enough to be held. Other than that, I don't believe there's anything they have in common. Am I correct about that?
And that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point of why there needs to be some due process afforded these folks to determine if the decision to hold these folks was made correctly. And you're exactly right. A number of these folks ought not have been held. We hope that most of them have now been released, but we don't know that for sure. So the 200 some odd plus that remain in custody there or in detention, they ought to have their day where they can present the information that suggests why they ought not be held.
Now, when you talk about their day in court, I assume that even the American Civil Liberties Union, a card-carrying member, your organization's been pilloried, sometimes mocked in the press for your strict adherence to civil liberties, but I assume that even the ACLU would be willing to give a trial to these people, and if found guilty, would say you have every right to put them in jail for life. I don't know how ACLU feels about the death penalty, but presumably if these people are given a fair trial and are convicted, you have no problem with the government holding them.
You're correct, but and not to make too fine a point on it, but the first step is to decide whether they ought to be held or not. And then you get to the point of deciding whether you're going to bring them up on charges for some war crime or other criminal action that may have occurred. And you know we've got this first group that are now up for these proceedings. So that's where you get into a more detailed examination of what they did and whether there was some crime that would justify their continued detention. But the first step for the 200 and however many, you have the number,
270.
Yeah. The first step for them is for there to be some examination of whether we have the right to continue to hold them.
And also, just to further answer Lamont's questions, it's interesting. The government has already determined, with several dozen of them, that they are no threat. And they're being held because we're afraid that if we send them back to their home countries, they'll be tortured. In my view, if you have an innocent man in an American jail for 6 years, and you know he's innocent, I'd at least let him come to the United States and become a citizen. If you disagree, or if you agree, let me know. 888-488-MARK. Back after this.
many women get hit by their boyfriends and husbands. Too many women are pressured into having unprotected sex. Half of the people in the world living with AIDS are women. It doesn't have to be this way. Together, we can change this reality. Let's strive for a world free of violence. At Volunteers of America, we don't just give kids a way to stay off the streets. We give them the tools they need to reach their full potential. We don't just help the elderly receive needed care. We help them live life to the fullest. We don't just provide food for homeless individuals and families. We provide job training and placements so they can buy groceries. Volunteers of America is a national organization that for over 100 years has provided programs and services that allow people to overcome their challenges to become vital members of their community. At Volunteers of America, we don't just help people, we help people help themselves. Find out how you can support the programs that are working in your community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
Drivers face all kinds of distractions. Before your wireless phone becomes one of them, stop. Drive safely. Keep your phone in easy reach and dial sensibly. In bad weather or traffic, call later and use a hands-free device. Remember, with wireless, safety is your call.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm sitting here with Michael McLeod Ball, the Chief Legislative and Policy Counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union. And we're talking about the writ of habeas corpus, which sounds like some legal mumbo-jumbo until you realize that it is the only thing that protects you from having some president or some governor or some police officer pick you up on the street and hold you forever without a trial. The writ of habeas corpus gives you the right to say, hey, why are you holding me? Prove you have a right to hold me, and if you can't, you got to set me free. The United States Supreme Court last week issued a surprising opinion for some of us in Boumediene v. Bush, surprising because the person who wrote the opinion, Justice Kennedy, is the same person who put George Bush in power, the same person who said, we're not going to count the votes in Florida in December 2000 because if you count them, Gore wins, and I want Bush to win. Kennedy changed his mind. Maybe he was upset by all the things the Bush administration has done, but he decided this time he's going to uphold the Constitution and insist that even people in Guantanamo Bay, who the administration declares are awful, awful people, even they shall have their day in court. If you want to call in, here's your last chance, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. You can also comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. Michael, in the break, you were telling me that in the immigration context, there are similar, this isn't just about Guantanamo Bay, there are people that are being held on immigration charges, perhaps forever, without a trial.
Well, it's not precisely parallel, and the Boumediene decision does not affect the treatment of immigrants. But you know that in the years since 2001, there has been a great emphasis in a stricter interpretation of what we allow immigrants to do or not do while they're in the country. It used to be the practice that that students would overstay their visas, for example. Now, if people are found in that situation, they're immediately taken to detention centers and processed for deportation. There are examples of people who are lawfully admitted as permanent residents, and they commit some minor, very minor misdemeanor offense that's used to revoke their permanent residency status, and they're deported overseas.
But shouldn't immigrants have fewer rights? I mean, the Constitution of the United States is to protect American citizens, right? I mean, that's why you become an American citizen, you get all these protections. We can't give all those rights to immigrants, can we?
Well, I think we can.
Okay.
If people are lawfully here in the country, they're entitled to certain rights.
What if they're unlawfully
here? Even if people are unlawfully in this country, they are entitled to certain rights. And that's part of this Boumediene decision.
But even you might concede that someone unlawfully here may not not have all the rights.
May not have all of the rights, but they have most of the rights, and the Constitution makes it pretty clear which of those rights they have and they don't have. But as far as the basic due process rights, they are entitled to most of those.
Due process meaning a right to say, hey, why are you holding me in jail?
Hey.
Tell me who said I committed a crime and let me confront them and see if they're telling the truth.
And to have a fair process invoked in order to determine whether there is some penalty that is being imposed, whether that's deportation or something else.
Now, in terms of this distinction between citizens and immigrants, it's interesting to me, the Bush administration was not just saying originally that they can put foreigners in jail forever without trial. Originally, they said they could do Americans, too.
Mm-hmm.
There were two Americans that they held. I know that Jose Padilla was one of them. I think Hamdi was the other one. These were American citizens, and the administration had the position they could pick up an American citizen, never charge them with a crime, hold them in jail for life. Now, it's interesting. Before this time, the only time I've kind of read something like that is in Franz Kafka's The Trial, and in other, China, I think, does this. East Germany did this. Has any other president, other than George W. Bush, argued he could put American citizens in jail forever without trial?
Well, not to my knowledge, although I think John Adams may have come close.
It was the Sedition Act.
But
even
act.
Then, he was saying people actually did something.
That's
they spoke
right.
against him.
Yeah,
in
right.
this case, Bush said, I never have to give evidence to any court.
That's right. And, let's ascribe to the president the purest of motives.
Okay.
He has a responsibility.
That's hard to do, but I'll do my best.
He has a responsibility to protect the country. But
right.
he's got to play by the rules when he's going to do that. You know, in this situation, it seems as though the administration would take the most extreme position, and then slowly but surely, when it was compelled to, it would fall back from that position to a new line of defense.
So first it said we could take any American citizen anywhere, hold them in jail forever,
mm-hmm.
and then the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. And they said, okay, we'll take non-citizens
right.
and hold them anywhere forever.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've just said today you can't do that either.
Yeah, and there have been a series of decisions about what rights the Guantanamo detainees are entitled to. It started out you have essentially no rights, and then there would be another, the Military Commissions Act would be passed, and so that started the clock all over again on the judicial proceedings. You know that both Congress and the administration knew that there would be a certain amount of time that would be taken up challenging the legitimacy of those proceedings. And so it's simply a case of running out the clock, and I'm pretty convinced that they're now in a situation where they're just going to leave this mess for the next guy.
And let's talk about the next guy, because John McCain and Barack Obama have come away with two very different positions on this. Barack Obama supports the Supreme Court decision,
mm-hmm.
says that he believes under the Constitution you can't suspend habeas corpus except for invasion or rebellion. John McCain disagrees.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks you can suspend habeas corpus. He thinks you can hold people forever without trial. He agrees with the dissent of the opinion. Do you think that this race will largely be decided on whether the American people, well, maybe not decided on this point, but do you think the Americans should care about whether or not we have a president that says you have a right to challenge the president's authority, or a president that says, no, respect me, I know what's best for you, leave me alone, and I'm going to detain who I want?
Well, I'm not quite sure if the race will be decided on that issue. There are a lot of important issues that are being discussed right now, and people say that the economy is always very important
sure.
to the electorate. But, as an ACLU a person, I hope that this race finds its way toward a discussion of some of these core issues. I hope that the country becomes better educated about the Constitution of the United States. I hope that can be a substantial part of the debate.
It's interesting. I think a lot of Americans, when they see someone else being picked up on the street, they say, oh, well, that's probably a criminal. I'm glad the police got them. I'm glad they're going to jail for a long time. We don't have to give them a full trial. Why are we giving all these trials to criminals? But if you yourself is picked up or your family member, mm-hmm. suddenly you want a lawyer. You want a right to challenge the accusations
Absolutely.
Against you.
Yeah. It's not such a small or remote thing right now with all of the discussion that's going on over electronic surveillance. Everybody in this country is subject to having their emails, their telephone calls monitored by the government.
Now, that's interesting to me because the Fourth Amendment says that you shall not be subject to unreasonable searches and seizures unless the government has probable cause to think you've committed a crime. Mm-hmm. And yet this president, and I believe it's the first in American history, has said, no, we have a right to spy on everybody, mm-hmm. on you, on me, on you watching this. That's right, spying on you too. And the president has insisted that he doesn't have to obey the old law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Indeed, he has the right to spy on everybody. Am I right? Is it really that expansive?
That is what is going on right now. We know that is happening right now, that there is surveillance of email and telephone communications.
Of people that have no reason to think that they've committed a crime. I mean, I don't mind spying on the mobster talking to the guy doing the drug thing.
And how do you decide? How do you decide who you surveil?
Well, the courts traditionally have to give a warrant, but now the president says we don't need that anymore.
That's right, and that is one of the things that we are fighting against, and the bill that will be up again in Congress within the next couple of weeks, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, has to do with those very issues.
Tell me what's coming up, because when this came up 3 months ago, it seemed like I was very afraid, frankly, the Democrats were going to cave. Our senator, Jim Webb of Virginia, caved in, did the wrong thing, voted to allow the president to not only surveil everyone without a warrant, but said that he could do that without any limitation whatsoever. I got very angry with Jim Webb. I invited him on this show. Senator Webb, you're still invited on this show to explain yourself why you would vote for this horrible bill. His only response was he voted for some amendments, which would have made the bill much better. Mm-hmm. But when they didn't come through, he voted for it anyway. I increased my invitation. And folks, by the way, if you want Senator Webb to answer this question, call his office and ask him to come on my show and to answer these questions. Don't run and hide from me, Senator Webb. But in any case, luckily, Senator Webb did the wrong thing, but Democrats in the House did the right thing, and they actually stood up to the president. Are they going to cave in now? I hope not.
Well, it's looking like they might. The best information we have, and it's sort of a moving target right now, so we're not precisely sure what's going to happen, but the most recent information we have is that there is a so-called compromise, which we are not okay with. We don't call it a compromise when you're giving up
the store. There were two issues in the old bill. So there were two. One was whether or not the telecommunications companies that broke the law, that illegally spied on hundreds of millions of Americans at the president's request, should get immunity, should be able to say, well, the president told us to break the law, so it's okay, don't sue us. That was one issue. The other issue was called exclusivity, whether or not the president is bound by the law at all. How are we on those two points?
Well, they both remain significant issues, and I think goes the wrong way. On the immunity issue, one aspect of the compromise would allow that decision to be made in a federal district court rather than in the secret foreign intelligence court.
The court could decide whether or not they were immune?
Well, the court would decide if the president had given the telecom companies a note.
The president gave him a note. He said, go break the law. But that doesn't give him the right to break the law.
But there's a further provision that leaves it unclear whether the district court can actually confirm whether that note was given or what the contents of that note would be.
Let me just conclude by saying this. There's an old provision in the law. I learned this in law school when I was at Yale that I thought was a really powerful thing. And it said that if the sheriff has a warrant, he can break into your house, he can take you to jail, and take you away. If the sheriff has no legal right to do something, he can't break into your house any more than an ordinary robber. And if he does, you could treat him like any other burglar. If you don't have a legal right to do your action, it's as good as being a criminal. If I don't care whether the president told the telecommunications companies to break the law, if they do it, and it's not legal, it's not legal. Simple as that. I want to thank Michael McCaw-Ball for coming on the show, for all he's doing, and urge you to urge your representative to protect your constitutional rights. Don't allow them to vote for the president. Thank you. Hello.